Big Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time we come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that loves undivided.
Yup. You either go to church or you're gonna go to hell. Get a job.
Welcome back. Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Friday, November 18th, 2022. And again, the announcements. RBN is having a book drive. RBN's John Stadtmiller book drive, perhaps you've heard. As I mentioned in the first hour, all donations of any amount are always much appreciated and gratefully accepted. Thank you for supporting the network. This network is obviously listener supported. We do not have, you know, this broadcast is brought to you by a grant from the Ford Foundation and the MacArthur Foundation and the John T. and Catherine, you know, the Sloan Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. Not that kind of a network. So we appreciate listener support. Thank you very much. Now through January 8th, donate $100 or more for an opportunity to receive a book previously owned by John Stadtmiller. It's, as I said, a great gift idea, I think, for that special someone in the know, or perhaps for someone who should know. Donations received after November 1st are eligible. For questions, call RBN at 800-724-2719, extension 3. Winners will be announced every Sunday. Every Sunday evening during hour two of Off the Beaten Path with Steve Elkins at 8 p.m. Central. Entrants who do not win a book will carry over into the next week's drawing. So obviously the sooner you donate, the greater your odds. Not that that's why you donate, but, you know, for whatever it's worth. Congratulations to last week's winners, Robert in California and Tyler in Ohio. And thank you to both of you for your generosity in helping the network. This week's book, Seeds of Fire, China and the Story Behind the Attack on America by Gordon Thomas, published in 2001. Visit republicbroadcasting.org for further details. So I'm doing the holiday countdown, but it's actually, I'm calling it the Holy Day Countdown. I've gone through Arnold J. Toynbee's Study of History a few times and mentioned Toynbee in particular speaking to the manipulation of society at large based on language and how this has been, you know, language has essentially been weaponized to transition an entire civilization down through the ages. Don't take my word for it. It's not my view. I'm not the, well, it is my view, but I'm, in this case, I'm speaking to the research done by the legendary macro historian extraordinaire, Arnold J. Toynbee himself, you know, Fabian Intriguer, that guy. Anyway, he was the one who wrote in his 12-volume series, A Study of History, that yes, indeed, down through the ages, entire civilizations have been manipulated through the subversion of language. And so the term holiday is one example, and so I'm going to take that back, and I'm going to call this a Holy Day Countdown and a Holy Day Christmas Season Movie List. So the Holy Day Countdown, 6 days until Thanksgiving, and we can get into all the controversies, and I've done shows on that or broadcasts on that in the past. The controversy, you know, the duality of holidays like Christmas and Easter. I just talked about it in during the Halloween season this year. I'm going to set that aside for the time being. So 6 days until Thanksgiving, 37 days until Christmas, 44 days until New Year's today. And the movies I mentioned in the first hour, Dear Secret Santa is my pick for today, released in 2013. And the two for the weekend, The Christmas Card, which is a TV movie starring Ed Asner, John Newton, and Alice Evans. And it's just, you know, it's that time of year where I think that's a good fit. It's one that you can, I think you can watch over and over. The Christmas Card, released in 2006. And one for the kids, speaking of the anthropomorphic suspended disbelief, you know, can you really get away from it? The old classics. How about Frosty the Snowman? The TV short, released in 1969. You know, and you just can't seem to get away from the shenanigans, though. You know, some of these featured the voice of Burl Ives, who, you know, the Masons, many of the Masonic websites like to boast that, you know, Ives in particular was a high-ranking Mason. Well, we're just making good men better. Well, who decides? So those are the two other, those are the three movies. My pick for the weekend, Dear Secret Santa, released in 2013. The Christmas Card, released in 2006. And Frosty the Snowman, for the youngsters, released in 1969. And, you know, whatever issue I could find with these, those issues I think pale in comparison to, well, for example, what I'm talking about today with regard to the New England Journal of Medicine and the hijinks that's afoot. You know, what would happen, speaking of the manipulation of language, I feel like maybe Larkin, Texas is saying, you know, Frederick Mann deserves honorable mention here for the anatomy of slave speak and, you know, the story that he tells in the opening pages. What would happen if, similar to what you read in Alice in Wonderland, when Alice decries nonsense, and then, you know, what would happen if we all just sort of laughed about these things instead of took them seriously? It's interesting that some people will actually take the findings, so-called, the propaganda, essentially, of the New England Journal of Medicine study, so-called, seriously. What would happen if we just decided to act like adults, shall we say? So, from, I mentioned during the first hour, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the structural racism mentioned in the, so-called anyway, structural racism, mentioned in the New England Journal of Medicine study, lifting universal masking in schools, COVID-19 incidents among students and staff. This was published November 9, 2022. And these folks, it's well, how many folks is it? 1, 2, 3. We're so credentialed, it's hard to know how many people we're looking at. I believe 8. 8 authors. The authors conclude, or, you know, the folks whose name is stamped on this anyway. The study concludes, our results also suggest that universal masking may be an important tool for mitigating the effects of structural racism in schools. including the differential risk of severe COVID-19 educational disruptions and health and economic effects of secondary transmission to household members. From the beginning, in the results, they state our results support universal masking as an important strategy for reducing COVID-19 incidents in schools and loss of in-person school days. Which is interesting because, like telehealth, Bill Gates wants to go to so-called education as soon as possible. As such, we believe that universal masking may be especially useful for mitigating effects of structural racism in schools, including potential deepening of educational inequities. Which is, I mean, that's just a gargantuan leap. How did you get there? Universal masking is an important strategy for reducing COVID-19 incidents. As well, it may be especially useful for mitigating effects of structural racism. Huh? What did I miss? You know, and if I didn't see it with my own eyes in this case, I wouldn't believe it. So, Carol Markowitz's New York Post article, Masks Reduce Racism Study is latest sign U.S. medical establishment is insanely perilously woke. You know what? Before we do that, actually, John Taylor Gatto has told us on more than one occasion, on several occasions, what the shenanigans are really all about. We should probably play that before we get too far down the road. So let me do that real quick. All right. Okay. So what is the purpose of this insanity? You know, looking at the picture again, these poor children I'm not exactly sure what this mannerism is with their right hand and their left hand, but it's for a specific reason, and they're all wearing masks, obviously. And again, in the background above the chalkboard, there's the little banner that reads Jesus loves me, which, you know, Jesus is the great physician. I'm pretty sure that with Jesus, we don't need to worry about whatever the New England Journal of Medicine says, because, well, maybe we'll come back to that. There's one young man who seems to at least be a dissenting, you know, this is an interesting photo op, and the signs that the children are doing with their hands reminds me of the Bellamy salute. So what is the purpose of these ridiculous orders? Well, John Taylor Gatto told us, remember? Go ahead, please.
How can you establish whether someone has successfully developed this automatic reaction? Because people have a proclivity when they're given sensible orders to follow it. That's not what they want to reach. The only way you can measure this is to give stupid orders and people automatically follow those. Now you've achieved function one. Have you ever wondered why some of the foolish things schools do are allowed to continue? Number two, he calls.
All right.
He calls it
the incomparable John Taylor Gatto on the six purposes of schooling, and that's actually something that maybe we should get into more at some point, but or back into, I suppose. You can find that on YouTube and republicbroadcasting.org. So, for now, back to Carol Markowitz's article, New York Post, November 11, 2022, Masks Reduce Racism, Study is Latest Sign. I would call this a breath of sanity. So she writes, is there anything masks can't do except for control COVID spread, of course? A new study in the New England Journal of Medicine purports to show that mask policies in schools work to contain COVID, but that's not all. The authors conclude, quote, we believe that universal masking may be especially useful for mitigating effects of structural racism in schools, including potential deepening of educational inequities, end quote. Sure, masks help fix structural racism. Why not? And the next study will show masks fight climate change. And I think that's a prescient observation. I could continue on with this. The article, I would say, is it feels like a breath of fresh air to me. I had intended to offer an extended excerpt, which I will forego. In the interest of time, I spent perhaps enough time on the study itself just to, give fair treatment and not seem hyperbolic. I'm not making this up. This is actually published in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is insane. But let's define terms, shall we? What do we mean by structural racism? And in that interview, Glenn Beck and Voddie Baucham, I think that Voddie Baucham did a good job sort of outlining what is meant. And isn't it interesting how this is just another one of those fluid terms of art that's used to manipulate people? Beat people into submission in the fashion that John Taylor Gatto mentioned. So here's Voddie Baucham on what exactly it is we're talking about when we hear things like structural racism. Go ahead, please.
But that disconnect between the two is dangerous.
It's absolutely dangerous. But I think what led people to even entertain this is the subtlety, right? Social justice. I mean, if you don't know what that means, and you're a Christian, you're like, well, yeah, right? Anti-racism. Of course, right? Mm-hmm.
Can't tell you how many people I've had.
Racial justice.
Yeah. I've had so many conversations with that and say, yeah, the label sounds good, just like the Inflation Reduction Act. Sounds good. That's not what it is.
Really good. Yeah. Inflation Reduction Act. Well, what does it do?
Not that.
Yeah, it causes more inflation. Yeah. So I think for a lot of people, right? Again, when you're talking about people who love the Lord and who love their fellow man, right? And they see people in pain, right? Mm-hmm. And despair and anguish, and people are saying, there's this injustice out there and we need to be about social justice and racial justice and anti-racism and da 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 da. I think there is a tendency for folks to say,
yes.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. And it's not only until later. I was talking to somebody, I guess the day before yesterday, who was in Denton, and they college student. And
we'll finish that clip on the other side of this break. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
So, Voddie Baucham explaining what we're talking about exactly when we're talking about this concept known at least in one sense as structural racism. What is it that we're talking about? Go ahead, please.
Anti-racism and da-da-da-da-da. I think there is a tendency for folks to say,
yes.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. You know. And it's not only until later, I was talking to somebody, I guess the day before yesterday, who was in Denton, and they college student, and they were out, and, you know, there was a Black Lives Matter march. And so I think he was with his sister or somebody, and, you know, people were like, you know, Black Lives Matter, and they're marching, and this, that, and the other. And his sister's like, you want to join them? And he goes, yeah, I think we should, you know. And he said they marched for a little while, and all of a sudden they realized, you know what, this might not be what we thought it was.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think that there are a lot of people who, on a broader scale, had that experience. And I think they began to use the terminology. They began to perhaps even, try to get involved. And then slowly but surely, the masks came off.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that this is not what we thought it was. And I think even more significantly than that, the premise was wrong. So people always, for me, when people start talking about, racial justice and this mm-hmm. justice, I say, okay, let's back up and tell me how you're defining injustice, right? And then when they say, well, we're defining injustice as, disparate outcomes, mm-hmm. right? We're not saying that there's, nobody's saying, hey, there's a lunch counter over there
mm-hmm.
that's saying that people who look like this or belong there, they can't come to the lunch mm-hmm. counter, right? Because you and I both know if that's the case, then we posse up and we go, right?
I go with you.
They're not saying that. They're mm-hmm. saying, no. There's these disparate outcomes, right? And these outcomes only exist because of the racism that's baked into the system. And so we've got to go and deconstruct this and fix these disparate outcomes. I call it chasing ghosts, right?
Yeah.
And so, that's what I want to know. You tell me what the injustice is, and then I'll tell you whether or not I'm going to partner with you in order to correct that injustice. Because what you're defining as injustice may not be injustice at all. And it often isn't.
There you go. In a nutshell, that's pretty well condensed, I would say. And interesting stuff, in light of what I mentioned earlier in today's broadcast, then slowly but surely the masks come off. How ironic. And, folks realize this is not what we thought it was. And even more significantly, that the premise was wrong. And so what it is, it's the same old effort to, it's the nihilistic Marxist germ to deconstruct society so that it can be reconstructed. And this has many faces, but it takes resources that are beyond just a local grassroots campaign. There is no such thing. It is the Gene Sharp color revolutionary germ, the Saul Alinsky kind of thing. And so when he says chasing ghosts, doesn't that sound like the invisible enemy that we keep hearing about, that we just can't? We have invisible enemies everywhere, whether they're in caves or in our bodies, allegedly, just invisible enemies everywhere. So be afraid, be very afraid, so that we can control you. That's what it comes down to. We played the excerpt of John Taylor Gatto on the six purposes of schooling, which is drawn from Richard Grove's interview, The Ultimate History Lesson, of John Taylor Gatto. And Gatto was citing, I wanted to mention, Alexander James Ingalls, which, as he mentions in the interview, it looks like Inglis, but it's pronounced Ingalls, Principles of Secondary Education. And he tells the story about how he went searching for this. I think it was Cubberley who mentioned it. Or no, it was G. Stanley Hall who mentioned, if you want to know what education is really all about, you need to get Ingalls' Principles of Secondary Education. And so he pursues this, and Harvard says they've never heard of this guy, even though they have an Ingalls lecture. So if you go to archive.org, you can find Principles of Secondary Education and the six important functions of secondary education listed on page 375. Stick around, we'll be right back.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth. Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Friday, November 18th, 2022. Couple of things. We're just double checking. So the first of all, the MMWR, the CDC Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report that I mentioned earlier, was July 2020. Community and close contact exposures associated with COVID-19 among symptomatic adults greater than or equal to 18 years in 11 outpatient healthcare facilities, United States, July 2020. Weekly, September 11, 2020. And on page, you can download the PDF. Page 4 of the PDF, but page 1261 of the MMWR, volume 69, number 36. The table is shown. Table continued, the continuation of the table. Characteristics of symptomatic adults greater than or equal to 18 years, equal to or greater than, whichever you prefer, who were outpatients in 11 academic healthcare facilities and who received positive and negative SARS-CoV-2 test results, United States, July 1 to 29, 2020. Characteristic, previous close contact, etc., relationship to close contact, etc. Reported use of cloth, face covering or mask 14 days before illness onset. Never, rarely, sometimes, often, always. Always 108 case patients, which was 70.6%, and 74.2% of control participants. So that's the 70 to 75% of the folks who tested positive reported always wearing masks. Now, what do you make of that? I don't know. This is just sort of an anecdotal glance at the findings and, you know, lies, damn lies, and statistics perhaps applies with force. You can torture the data long enough and have it scream whatever tune you want. I'm just saying that's interesting. Also, speaking of Alexander James Ingalls' Principles of Secondary Education on page 375, this is something that should receive particular attention. You know, with regard to what I mentioned, because obviously this is the New England Journal of Medicine so-called study lifting universal masking in schools, COVID-19 incidence among students and staff is obviously concerned with that. And Richard Grove's interview, magnificent interview of John Taylor Gatto, which is the ultimate history lesson, comprises the ultimate history lesson, a weekend with John Taylor Gatto. Just to, you know, there is the clip, obviously, there's a clip that circulates that John Taylor Gatto published himself on his YouTube channel, John Taylor Gatto TV, Six Purposes of Schooling, which is the clip from episode 5 of the ultimate history lesson. And so, you know, speaking of things that are worth watching, this is probably something worth watching and circulating, I would strongly argue. And if you want just that little excerpt, the extended excerpt, actually, it's about 13 or 14 minutes long, but it's, if you go to number 5, episode 5 in the Ultimate History Lesson, hour 5 plus closing and credits, it's point number 6 listed in the YouTube description, the 6 important functions of secondary education, Alexander James Ingalls, and Principles of Secondary Education, the adjustive functions, integrative or conformist functions, directive function, differentiating function, selective function, and the propaedeutic function. And so, you know, there's more, and it's just interesting to listen to anyway, I would say. So there's that bit of housekeeping. Hopefully that all makes sense. And to finish things out, as I mentioned, you know, I wanted to get back to the Luke discussion. the same revolutionary, nihilistic, critical, what I would call Hellenistic, Pyrrhonism of Sextus Empiricus is at work in the attack on Luke and Paul. It's a slight variation of the thing that Vodi Bakum described, which pertains to the, you know, masks can prevent or mitigate the effects of structural racism nonsense. Back to all of that, you know, in the context of attacking the Bible, everything's being attacked as a means of destroying civilization to rebuild along Genesis 11 lines. That's what's really going on. In simple terms, that's what we're witnessing. In real time, it's happened at glacial speed over the last 100, 200, few hundred years, particularly about the last 500 years, and particularly with the advent of the printing press. The movable type press has made the promulgation of propaganda and the manipulation of the hearts and minds, you know, these hearts and minds campaigns, much more it has accelerated those efforts. And then obviously into the information age with the digital technology that we have and so forth. So as I said, you know, I speaking of Luke and the criticism of Luke and his authorship, I chose Joseph B. Tyson's August 2010 article, Luke, Judaism and Anti-Judaism, as in my mind particularly emblematic of this kind of thing. And that was published over at University of Arizona, targeting the same group that, you know, NEMJ study targets and that John Taylor Gatto mentioned, obviously. So from Tyson's article, the question I want to raise here is this. Does Christian hostility to Jews have roots in those books which Christians regard as sacred and authoritative, specifically the writings of Luke? I thought it would be interesting, actually, to play a little clip. I'm not going to have time to unpack all of this, and I keep saying for the last 3 days now, this is the third day, that I'm going to unpack this. Might not get to as much as I want, but I just thought it would be interesting to play this little fun fact. What are the Jews saying? You know, if we're going to take everything at face value and we're just going to say, let's just go with who everyone says who is in the zoo. Who's who in the zoo defined as sort of self-defined. So if Joseph B. Tyson is saying that there's this Christian hostility, what are Jews saying? And I thought, you know, the One for Israel ministry is an interesting voice to hear from. So here's that. Go ahead, please.
You know, a huge testimony for the Jewish people, and it's fairly well known, that in the early steps of gathering the Jews back to Israel, evangelical Christians had a tremendous part. And yet, sometimes they tell me, I support this thing or that thing, you know, different kinds of organizations. My challenge to these friends, and maybe you're one of them, is that the best way to bless Israel is with Jesus. This is what our people truly need.
That's interesting. So people say, "What, Chris, you don't subscribe to that, right?" You know, the idea that Christians had a tremendous part, and you know, the Israel in the day of the Bible, and you don't buy into that. No, but we're taking things at face value here, because if we're going to compare apples to apples in Joseph B. Tyson's critique, his article, then we probably should begin on the lines of apples to apples. And so establishment narrative, face value, establishment narrative, face value, sort of, if that makes sense. And so this, just right out of the gates, challenges the supposition of Joseph B. Tyson. So, you know, not to disparage the good professor emeritus of religious studies, Southern Methodist University, who is a highly credentialed individual, obviously. But, you know, getting back to what I said yesterday, first of all, what hostility? Who's defining terms? Who are we calling Christian? What is the nature of the hostility? And if there be any, toward whom or what is it directed? The terms Christian and anti-Semitism are mutually exclusive. If you read the Bible and if you are a Christian, due to the fact that one is originally by nature a wild olive, fortunately grafted in among them and partaker with them of the rich root of the olive tree. And Christians have a unique fondness for the descendants of Shem. The idea of a so-called anti-Semitic Christian is an oxymoron. As I said yesterday, it's quite absurd. I think it was yesterday. It's a mythical, fabricated construct. It's not something that exists in reality. It's like a unicorn. It's used to advance a narrative that is otherwise without basis or merit. So, you know, it's kind of like these other things that kids learn. Well, you know, there's the trolley car dilemma, and so we really need to decide, will we kill one really important person or will we kill 100, you know, insignificant peons because we have to make these decisions? No, nowhere in life will you ever face that so-called dilemma. I mean, unless you know, are the subject of Christopher Browning's Ordinary Men, or, you know, Stephen Ambrose's Band of Brothers, or, you know, Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. If you have to deal with the trolley car dilemma, something has gone horribly wrong. It's not a thing we all confront in our lives. So it's that kind of thing. There is, however, as I said previously, the Romans 11:25 mystery of hard-heartedness, which when confronted by Stephen in Acts 7, for example, produces antagonism, vociferous hostility. There's also the hostility expressed by Jesus in Revelation 3:9 and 2:9 toward those which say they are Jews and are not, but lie and are the synagogue of Satan. So as I said before, I would call this the same old Genesis 3:1, yea, hath God said. Cynical, critical, skeptical, so-called empiricism that we've heard about. No, it's the scientific method. We just prove what we can prove. And, well, it's interesting, you know, read Romans 1 around verses 18 to 20 or so and see what gets thrown out with empiricism. It's the same old Pyrrhonism of Sextus Empiricus. It's that effort, the scene from the garden on down through the ages, to chip away at Christ and God the Father, ultimately inducing and encouraging such a one to deny God. And again, that's where dystheism and misotheism come in. So who is Joseph B. Tyson? The kids are encouraged to believe that, you know, Poobah of Poobahs means something significant, but do they have an opportunity to have their Lysander Spooner moment and say, not my professor emeritus, perhaps? Doubtful. So what is this doing to young impressionable minds? I realize his credentials, according to the traditions of men, are impressive. I am by no means nearly as credentialed. I imagine, however, that Stephen in Acts 7 was likewise less credentialed than the synagogue of the Libertines and Cyrenians and Alexandrians who disputed with him. But, you know, isn't friendship with the world enmity with God? James 4:4. Why does God say he is, or excuse me, who does God say that someone like Joseph B. Tyson is, that I should consider what he has to say, or the students should? And I mean that in all humility and sincerity. It's true, it's wise to have many, a multitude of counselors, Proverbs 15:22, but there's also the litmus test of 1 John 4, verses 1 through 5 in particular. So in seeking to take every thought captive, I trust even the good professor emeritus himself would approve of not worshiping men but God alone. The question is on the face of, you know, the question, as I mentioned previously, of whether Luke is a Jew or Gentile, which is sort of a stepping out of the Professor Emeritus's criticism, but the question specifically of whether Luke is a Jew or a Gentile is irrelevant. Because again, in Galatians 3:28, we read, there is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither bond nor free. There is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus. And that would include Luke. So those kinds of titles become irrelevant. And if you want to talk about who's a Jew, well, Romans 2 and Romans 9, I would say. But then we bump into the authorship of Paul again, like Luke. So, you know, Jesus said in John 8, to the Jews which believed on him, if ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So, to those Jews which believed on him. And the provocative irony here is, you know, this implies that these Jews who believed on Jesus were the first Christians, so to speak. What a compliment. And what was the response in the next verse, speaking of hostility? Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, etc., etc. And their response, they answered him, we be Abraham's seed and were never in bondage to any man. How sayest thou, ye shall be made free? And you continue on in John, and there's this hostility. So if there's any hostility, it sounds like it's coming from the other direction. And then there's the whole, you know, crucifixion thing, without going down that rabbit hole. There are many parallel passages to this concept. If the world hate you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. John 15:18. So we could and perhaps should leave it there, I suppose. Christian is called to be at peace with all men. Romans 12:18, 14:19, and Hebrews 12:14. In fact, Paul even says, you know, mentions being led to the slaughter. Romans, as I said, extensively addresses who's who in the zoo. And Romans 2, Romans 9, 10, 11. And again, there's that mystery, Romans 11:25, which I really think is, if you just take that, it's a very interesting and fascinating concept just to sort of ruminate on, the mystery of Romans 11:25, especially, you know, if what Elon Musk said, and even Bill Gates talks about peak baby, and it's not a Malthusian thing, and seems like we're well on the way to, you know, crashing the population of mankind. So in light of Romans 11:25, what does that portend? So just to sort of wrap up, what's really at work here is the same old accusatory spirit and effort to chip away at the Bible piece by piece, starting with the biggest pieces possible, and doing it very subtly, obviously, namely the authorship of Paul and Luke. Maybe at some point this should circle back around to Westcott and Hort and that whole discussion too. Obviously not today, we're out of time. If you can get people questioning the authorship of Paul and Luke, well, then you have you're rolling downhill, you know, and from there it's a short trip to distheism and misotheism, as I said, not to mention the Judaizers seeking to send us all to Noahide purgatory in images of Judaism and Luke and Acts. In 2010, Tyson speaks of theological and historical concerns of communities that increasingly saw themselves as separate from the Jewish synagogues. First of all, who's concerned? Again, who's defining terms? More importantly, separate from, yes, Christians are called to be set apart. 1 Peter 2:9, Deuteronomy 14:2, Psalm 4:3, 2 Corinthians 6:17, Revelation 18:4, but not in cult-like fashion, not as a cult. And as previously established, not to hostility, be at peace with all men. If you can get rid of Acts 2, then communism, socialism, communitarianism, the anti-Pentecostal, anti-Christ spirit of antagonism, the counterfeit, and hostility toward the Acts 2 pouring out of the outworking of the Holy Ghost, and all the other isms have free rein to fill the vacuum created, not to mention all the other more obvious, straightforward counterfeits, you know, including things like the New Apostolic Reformation and Word of Faith, Charismatic, Pentecostal, etc., etc., etc. So in the final analysis, the simple three-part question always abides, I would say. To me, it just seems to come down to when talking about matters of the Bible and the Christian faith and so forth, in particular opposition to or maybe just awareness of the Western esoteric influence that I would say has come down through the ages over the last 2,000 to 2,500 years in particular, the Hellenization, the Hellenizing influence, as I would put it. And again, the Pyrrhonism of Sextus Empiricus. The three-part question that always abides is, one, who's in charge? And so some verses to go along with this, just for good measure, why not? One, who's in charge? Isaiah 46:8. Two, who decides? Romans 9:20 and 21. As a result, who exclusively is ultimately glorified? Philippians 2:11. So that'll do it. And that'll take us to the weekend. I hope you have a great weekend. Hope you enjoy the movies, if you choose to watch them. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.